Carriage Bags.
Hi. Okay, hi. I'm pretty excited. Carly is on another level. We're going to get straight into things, but hi, welcome to Teenage Dirtbags, the podcast. We are a podcast that rates and reviews teen movies, and we talk about our teenage lives. I'm Maddie.
I'm Carly.
And today we have an episode that has been a long time coming, and we will talk about that a little bit. We have a guest on. I should say we are still in L.A., I don't know if these are going to be released in the same order or whatever, but at this point we are in LA.
Yes.
And we have a guest here that we spoke to, we think 6 months ago, maybe. We're not really sure.
Well, I've been tweeting at our guest for years, and she is always nice enough to respond, even though I'm such a weirdo. Always telling her how much I love her, and she always responds. And so it's been, this has been a long time coming.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Okay, let's just say your name. Okay, so she is a fabulous screenwriter. You might know her from, she co-wrote 10 Things I Hate About You, Legally Blonde, Ugly Truth, She's the Man. She currently has a series on Netflix called Trinkets. She also has a graphic novel called Misfit City. Probably a million other things that I can't remember at the moment, but
we will get into them all.
Yeah. Please welcome Kiersten Kiwi Smith.
Hello.
Hi. This is so, like, I said this right before we started recording, that you are so special to this podcast specifically, because A, obviously Carly's a writer and she's like a huge fan. I'm a fan too, but I'm not a writer. So she's that, but also we delve into teen movies and we have come across your name so many times, and we know your work, and it's so influential to the teen
genre.
Thank you. That's culture. The word I'm looking for. Culture. Yeah. So we are pumped.
I'm pumped too. Thank you so much for having me on.
We're so excited.
Thank you for being here at our little weird Airbnb.
it's got a great vibe. Yeah, it's tropical. There's animal horns.
It's a little hot in here right now. I'm dying. But the air conditioner's too.
We're overcome with excitement.
That's very accurate.
And it might have been more than 6 months ago. I feel like this has been it's been like a rom-com level courtship in terms of building to this exact moment in time.
I guess when we did, because the first episode we did of this podcast back in, well, we did it in December, but it was released in January, was 10 Things I Hate About You.
Right. I think I remember that. Was there like a party that you had too?
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm so happy about this.
There's so much. Me and my friend Allie, we were obsessed with 10 Things, as a lot of my peers were. And so for her 26th birthday, I hosted a party.
Bogie Lowenstein party, wasn't it? Yeah. There was Brie, as I recall.
So, so we had we replicated the yellow posters.
Oh my God.
We made actual posters that were quotes from the movie. We had Brie, we had the soundtrack playing. Yes. Everyone was in 90s gear. Yes. And we went full out for Bogey, because that's like, we have shirts actually made that say grip it and rip it, and with him like holding the golf club.
Oh my God.
So yeah, that's kind of where it began, and like that was like 3 years ago now, and then since then I've been kind of bugging you on Twitter just because I've loved
every minute of it. Yeah.
So that's really
Karen and
cool.
I were dazzled by that party, like the level, the production design of the party was
host
really
one
strong.
For, like, the 25th anniversary or something. Yes. Have you guys come?
Let's do that.
All out.
Because that was what, 1999, right?
Yeah.
That's 20. Oh,
it was it's 20 years. Ago. Yeah, we celebrated our 20th this year.
Crazy. Yeah, you had like Letters to Cleo. Play,
yes,
I saw that.
Yeah,
that's so crazy.
It was super cool. Andrew Keegan did a lot of hosting. He lent his planning magic to it. It was
that's
really good.
So
yeah,
cool.
So we actually had a poster of Andrew Keegan that said, "Place the penis on Joey Eat Me Donner," and then we had a big poster of him and we had to put little penises in the right spot. It was outrageous.
It was so clever.
Yeah.
I wish we could have been there.
I wish I wasn't there either. We didn't know each other at the time. Or maybe we did, but we weren't I didn't know her friend, so it's fine.
It's
whatever.
Fine.
We'll do another
okay,
one.
Okay, so what's that? 2024, this is when we'll have the party.
We'll do 2024. Okay.
All right, great.
Great.
Cool.
Perfect. Yep. Sign us up, put it in your phone.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you sort of
that's where I was gonna go.
Well, yeah, tell us a little bit about your high school experience and where you grew up.
Yes. So I grew up I spent high school in Washington State in I went to high school, Chimicum High School, which is a very small high school on the Olympic Peninsula, which is like 2 hours north of Seattle.
Okay.
And there were about 50 people in my class, only 200 people in the high school. So wow. It was a very, small experience. Yeah. And I mean, not to get too sad about it, but freshman year, one of our beloved classmates died.
Oh.
And all of the different social groups kind of switched around because we were united in our, like, missing him and mm-hmm. love for him. So I feel like we went into high school kind of all separated. And then by the time we graduated, we were all this sort of blended mix of the artists and the athletes and
that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
In a sad way. I mean, he was an amazing person named Stan Pollard and it was a real tragedy, but I feel like that happened, the sort of shattering of the different groups occurred. But I mean, I came out of junior high. I attempted to be a cheerleader in junior high. I had a lot of challenges memorizing the routines.
Okay.
I enjoy dancing, but my coordination is poor when I'm trying to come at it from an organized way.
Right.
I also had, like, I'm a sweaty person, so I had like the little shirts were like polo shirts that were royal blue, and I feel like every time I raised my arms up, I had pit stains.
Oh.
So I had a lot of insecurity right. about that. So that was not a high school career path for me, any kind of cheerleading activity.
Right.
But I was a festive teenager, and not in like a party, let's party hard, but more I was nerdy but really hyper. I think I was like hyper.
Okay.
Yeah. and pumped and I love boys.
Right.
Yeah.
What were you nerdy about?
I was nerdy about books and English maybe. And probably music as well. Yeah. I had a lot of cool friends who were introducing me to bands like, I don't know, Frankie Goes, this is the 80s, guys. So it's like Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Bauhaus, like
right.
weird, kind of this stuff of weird, Howard Jones. I don't know, there were a lot of like new wave bands.
Yeah.
And our school was in the middle of a cow pasture, Chimicum was. So it had a really kind of coastal redneck vibe to it. There were farms around it, and so I guess my friends and I were maybe like a little bit more of the new wave, or at least I was aspiring to be as cool
right.
as that. Like I was never colored my hair. I could never bleach my hair or get a full new wave haircut because I have curly hair. So so I think I was nerdy about that, although I was never academically entirely embraced. I got good grades, but I never got like student of the month.
Right.
Was that a thing?
That was a thing in Chimicum High School.
Really?
And I'm pretty bitter that I never got student of the month. That was a senior year, like you got an anointed student of the month.
Wow.
And I think I was starting to dabble in a lot of like public making out against lockers during dances with active grinding involved and
of course.
And getting in trouble and some light scandals here
sure.
and there,
yeah.
you know, that were pretty harmless, but they prevented me from being embraced as student of the month.
What kind of scandals are we talking about here?
Grinding.
active grinding. There was like a little misstep I had. I got drunk really for the first time when I was 16.
That's an average age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an average age. It was over the summer, and then I got like arrested for a DUI like the first night that I was
drunk. That went such a different way than I was expecting.
I know. Guys, I feel like I'm really dipping into some dark territory already.
Gosh.
That was kind of scandalous, yeah.
That's big scandal, yeah. So
yeah.
Especially the small high school, was everyone
right.
like...
Right. Yeah, I remember Kirsten. Mr. Dittmer, the first... So that happened in like June or July. Come back to school in September, and I arrive in school, and the geometry teacher's like, Kirsten, heard you had a busy summer.
No.
I'm like,
oh my
yeah,
God.
I was doing community service, dick.
Oh, no.
Which was also really great fun, because I got to, like, work at the fire hall.
Sure.
And sunbathe.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, so that was good.
Okay. So you got a DUI. That's pretty.
It was reduced to reckless driving.
Okay.
Yeah. That's good.
Because so I don't have an official criminal record.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And so after that, were you considered sort of a bad girl?
I think I kind of kept a high level of, let's just say, good, but naughty, maybe, you sure. know? So, I mean, I was also like a virgin all the way through my high school. I was like good, you know, there was rubbing, there was stuff like right, that. Right. There was things going on. I just don't know. It wasn't like full on. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, because Carly's also from a smaller town.
Yes.
And I'm from Toronto, and our school was huge, and it always. I mean, I'm sure there was scandals, but we didn't know about it. And did you kind of find that with your school in a smaller town? Because everyone knows everything, I would imagine, or in a smaller high school.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of kind of gossip and that. I also felt I'm an only child, and I would always be bonded really deeply with one person. I didn't really hang out in groups that much. It was more like I had a really intense, focused friendship, and then sometimes that would change. And then, I mean, two of my best friends in high school, three of them, Jamie Smith was a great best friend for me, and Sally Shaw, and Aline Maroney, and we all remain very in touch. And now that we're older, it doesn't feel like the lines of who's closer to who are really as demarcated as they were. Because it was hard for me to always to bond in a group. I hung out in some groups, and I attempted to play the athletics, like the volleyball, but I was a great bench player. That was one of my my real like superpowers as an athlete was I was great on the bench.
Sure. You're good backup. You're there for you know, if it's morale. Really needed and morale.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
yeah.
So did you always when did you kind of discover your love for writing?
It was in high school. It was really a teacher named Susan Phillips, and she complimented my writing in poetry and essays, and she had this beautiful red penmanship that she would write on our papers and just filled with really kind things. So she made me feel like I could, I don't know, like that was going to be a path for me. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I also did when I was younger, but I feel like Miss Phillips was really the person who was pushing me along that path, and probably it was a person that was really disappointed that I did these bad things and didn't get student of the month.
Right.
So, did you find yourself thinking in high school when she was telling you, you know, giving you compliments on your writing, did you find yourself going, oh, I could be a writer, like as my career, like I could write for, did that ever cross your mind?
I think it was more like, I should keep doing this. I'm good at it. And then it was always in my mind that I would go to college. I was always writing poetry too. She really encouraged me to write a lot of poetry. And so that became like this passionate pursuit. Mm-hmm. I went to the Centrum Arts program. I enrolled in contests and things like that. So I don't know if I was thinking of it as a career. I was just thinking like, I'll major in English when I go to college. And maybe one day writing will be part of the plan. I remember my dad being like, you should study econ. So I'd be like, I'm going to go to college and study econ, but I'm really going to be writing all the time too. You know, I think it was viewed as a fallback position kind of.
For sure. And do you still write poetry?
I don't as much, but I really want to get more into it. Can we please have some kind of poetry event where we like all have a slumber party and write like poems and have like poetry contests? I don't know.
What 100%.
Yes. I would love to. I'm still like a teenager in that way, where sometimes when I'm just like feeling too much, I just write little poems in my journal, and I'm like, oh man, I'm like 15, but it's so nice.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
I have found some of my, I always wanted so bad. I'm just not a good writer. I'm just not. And I remember so badly when I was in high school, I wanted to be able to do poetry. And when I look at them now, Carly has been able to see some of these gems. They are very depressing and like, but not like I wasn't a depressed child. I was very happy, but I just like, that's what I thought you had to do, and it just they're so horrible. But I'm happy to try with you guys when we do this poetry party. But they're just going to be way down the other side of the road. I feel like you guys are going to have these beautiful, like, light, nice things, and I'm going to be like, I will be the bench player the poetry.
Right.
I will do the morale. I'll do that. It'll be perfect.
And so, what was your relationship to boys?
Well, I liked a lot of boys, and what was great about being a freshman in high school is you have so many boys to choose from. And then what was great about being a senior in high school was you also still have boys that are in 11th grade to choose from. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was when I was like, cool, dating younger guys is right. where it's at,
yeah.
maybe.
Right.
but I got embroiled in some maybe like boys that had girlfriends. I remember there was a moment where girls would threaten to beat me up. I remember just two of those instances at a dance or after school for like fooling around with their boyfriend. I sort of loved a sort of tryst like element, which is weird. I don't know where that comes from. I mean, my parents are happily married. There wasn't like secret things going on, I don't think. Let's see. I was very smitten. My best friend Sally had two older brothers. I was really smitten with one of them, Dan. Then I was sort of smitten with the other one, Scott. Then I kind of dated both of them. Bless her heart.
I love this.
So bless her heart. She like stuck with me through that imbroglio. Imbroglio, whatever that word is. But yeah, I feel like there were just a lot of crushes and kissing.
Did you find that the guys that you were liking or that you had crushes on were, I don't even know how to say this, but I guess liking you back? Because, you know, I don't want to speak for you, Carly, but whenever I liked a guy in high school, it was not reciprocated. And it was my whole life of high school was crushing, 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 and everyone being like, no, no, no. Or like, you know, it was more of a dream sequence, like that guy, that guy, that guy. And I never spoke to him or something.
Right.
Did you find that connection between these people?
Clearly,
that you were?
I mean.
No, I know you did, but I mean specifically those crushes that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about those boys that you like write their name on your binder. Those kind of guys.
Yeah.
If you found that they were like, oh yeah, you're on my binder too, or whatever. Guys don't do that. But
I think there were boys. So our town, Chimicum, 20 minutes away, 15 minutes away was Port Townsend, which is this beautiful Victorian coastal town. And it was much more cosmopolitan, even though it's a population of 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So the boys who went to town, as it was called, the high school there, they were the exotic creatures. And they were the like far away dream boys that we could maybe somehow get to like have contact with at a party at some amazing like in the woods somewhere, which is not amazing, but at the time it seemed so amazing. So those boys were, there were like a few of those like kind of older dreamy like sexy new wave like and then also there were boys who were like, I went to some of these arts camps and Aileen and I would go to these church dances even though we weren't religious, and there would be you know, a church dance is a fucking like hot and sweaty like lust zone, you know, it's wild. People are amped up. You think we're amped up right now? I mean, they're really amped.
There's no one hornier than a Christian.
Oh my god,
serious.
I believe you.
I feel the good thing was about growing up in the 80s at this time too was, you know, there's fervent letter writing, and then mixtapes were being made. And yeah, so there was just a lot of pining for the far away, you know, cool guy.
And then
I think there was maybe, I mean, perhaps Dan, one of Sally's brothers, like there was a lot of breaking up and getting together. And I think I probably loved him more than he loved me. So,
sure.
But there was a lot, I felt like there was kind of a pretty good amount of action, you know, like without penetration, but yeah, there was some action.
That's what I hope for. Like if I ever have children, that's what I hope for.
Yeah.
Like, you know, experiment, but just skip the penetration until you're a bit older.
Right, right. Yeah. We turned out fine.
Yeah.
I think we turned out more than fine in this little area here.
Yes.
I think we got some really well-developed human beings.
I remember, let's see, what I just had a flash of being, so when we took driver's ed, my friend Jamie and I, it was over the summer, and one of our friends, Bunkie, was in the driver's ed class, and somehow we ended up on this lawn after the driver's ed class was over, and you know, it's summer school and there's no one around, and we decide like we're gonna practice giving hickeys. So we all just the three of us taking turns giving Bunkie hickeys, him giving us hickeys.
Oh my God, I love this so much.
And then it's just daylight, it's afternoon, it's just a hickey exploration.
That's really funny.
Yeah, there was a lot of parking in cars. There's a lot of fervent like backseat. I had a car, I had this that I drove. My parents had a 240D Mercedes that was olive green.
Oh.
And it was from the, what year? Like, it was a 10-year-old Mercedes or something, diesel. But there was a lot of like driving around in that car, then like making out in the back seat of that car. A lot of just making out.
Your high school experience and teenage experience
was awesome.
Is like, honestly, and this is so perfect for you, is like a movie. Like a lot of the things that you're describing sound like scenes from a movie, or like what I would imagine. Like if you were describing someone who didn't know what a teenager life was like, that's what I would explain. Like this is what is supposed to happen. And it's so great. That sounds like a movie. Now you're writing these movies.
Yeah.
I know. I feel like it's a bit weirder than that because of the strange small townness of it.
Yeah, but but the like back cool in the car.
You say that. Right.
The back in the car and like
it's
or
got
the
a
back of the car
feeling
and the,
to
and
it.
The giving hickeys to each other and the, I mean that's a little that's a little weird, honestly.
It is weird.
No, it's not though.
No, but that sounds like a scene from a movie. That does.
Cool.
It sounds like I don't know, like part of Dazed and Confused or something. That they all, right. Truthfully, like that they all went to the back football field and after they decided to sign their thing about no drugs and they went and give each other hickeys instead.
Yeah.
It just sounds like so classic teen movie.
I love it.
And so is there sort of nostalgia attached to your teen life? Is that why you write so much in the young adult teen realm? Or is that a coincidence?
No, I think I'm very nostalgic about it. Yeah. And
us too.
And perhaps it's, you know, I have not, like I said, I'm an only child. I still really am nervous about my parents finding out any, like, misbehaviors that might have occurred or might occur, which we won't talk about at all. For sure my mom is listening to this somewhere.
Oh, hi,
and
mom.
Just being like, what is going on? But I feel really pretty stunted, kind of like I'm engaged but I'm not married, and we've been engaged for 5 years.
Nice.
And really because I'm like I'm scared to get married because if I get married then it means I'm an adult. Yeah. And then that means I'm not a teenager anymore. So and I don't have kids, so I don't know, I feel perhaps I need to evolve a little bit, but
no.
I do stay.
No, I disagree. I mean, I, a couple days ago on Sunday, not to name drop, but I had the privilege of interviewing Catherine Hardwick. And she's
oh my God, she's the best.
Oh, she's the best. And she's in her 60s, and she just has this vibe about her. Like, she's still a teen. And it's not a bad thing at all. It's just, like, there's something youthful about her, and, like, I just love it. I'm like, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, there should always be a part of you that never grows up.
Mm-hmm. I 100%. Think you're right.
Yeah. So I love it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you and Catherine, like, I don't, have you met her? I feel like you
guys
would click. Like,
yeah. We have. And we're always really, we haven't gotten to work together, but we're always really excited to see each other.
That would be
so
a project.
She's so friendly. Oh. It would be.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Yeah, she's
do
really
it.
Cool.
Yeah.
She's really cool. And I mean, she gave us Twilight, and it was so fabulous.
She gave us, I mean, we really, Carly and I specifically, 13.
Oh,
like,
she gave us 13.
Is
like, of
course.
And Lords of Dogtown. Yeah. 13 is like, I mean, I was not doing any of those things at 13, God forbid. But the fact that it exists. I did want to bring
good.
Up really quickly, because I'm also an only child.
You are.
I am. And people are either shocked by it or obviously, because mm-hmm. I'm very attention seeking and running around all the time, but also I do seem like I have siblings or something. I don't know. But where I was going with this is this podcast specifically, there was, I don't remember what episode, but I talked about how I took my mom's car when I did not have a driver's license, and she listens. And she found this out. Like, I'm 30. And she listened and she called me and she went, "Pardon me?" And I was like 15, 16 years ago. And she was like, "Are you trying to punish me now?"
Yeah,
and
I'm you're
like,
grounded.
I'm like, I just identify what you said. Like, you're still nervous about your parents finding out things. Hi, yeah. Mom. Like, you're they're very different now, obviously. And they were pretty relaxed then, too. To a degree, but there's things where I'm like, oh, I don't want to know my mom to know, like, oh my god, in when I was like 14 I had my first kiss or whatever, like, I don't want them to know.
Right.
Until my parents started listening to this, I'm pretty sure my parents were like, she's probably still a virgin.
Nope.
I'm almost 30, but they're like, probably.
My mom said,
and now
she,
they know.
And now they know.
They know everything.
They know all the details now.
Right.
My mom said to me that she said she had to stop listening for a bit because it sounds like I'm just reciting my diary. And she's like, I need to just stop for a minute. Not that I'm saying anything extreme, but she's like, I feel like I'm not supposed to be listening to this. But anyway, so I kind of identify with that, which is where I was going with this.
I love that.
Okay, so I want to ask you a few things about who your celebrity crush was, first of all, growing up.
Yes. Okay, I guess I remember Rob Lowe posters.
He's still everyone's celebrity crush.
Yeah.
He has not aged one millisecond.
He's preserving really well. Yeah. And like, obviously, the members of Duran Duran.
Of course.
Probably, like, Simon Le Bon, John Taylor, Nick Rhodes. Then Wham was really big. My friend Aline was very devoted to Andrew Ridgely. I was devoted to George Michael. And then I guess I was also really like my female art crushes, like Madonna.
Yeah.
And I mean, seeing Jennifer Beals in Flashdance, which was more in junior high school, but getting to sort of be like, I want to be like these women.
Yeah.
And that was, I feel like that's what I hold on to more than the guys that I dreamed about being with. It was a little bit more like who I'm going to be when I get out of this small town.
Yeah. Well, that's so great.
Going along with that kind of,
Michael Shuffling and Jake Ryan in 16 Candles. That was big.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Forgive my ignorance on this, but yes. What were there any writers? Like, I don't know if in the 80s and 90s and until recently.
John Hughes. Yeah. Really.
It was John Hughes, yeah. But I was, other than John Hughes, was there anyone who, like, people knew about, or specifically any female writers that you looked up to? I know that's kind of a weird question because I don't know if there were any.
Of course there were.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying there weren't. I just mean, when you think of 80s writers, you think of John Hughes. That's what I mean. Was
Nora.
There anyone? Who's that?
Nora. I don't think I okay. was. Yeah, you definitely think of her.
Sure.
Now.
No, you're right. So is there anyone that you looked up to in.
As like a screenwriter, probably not.
Yeah. Sure.
Although I did have an after school job in a video store. Mm-hmm. So I was watching tons of movies constantly.
Oh, good.
And I was working in the library. So I was reading a lot of books. And there was this one writer from the 80s, Lori Colwin, who was a novelist, and she wrote this book, Happy All the Time, that is just it's a New York City comedy of manners with really complicated neurotic women. And I loved that book, and I loved Lori Colwin, and I got really obsessed with her.
Nice. Cool. That's perfect. That's exactly what I was kind of looking for, that kind of answer.
And poets like Anne Sexton and Sylvia Plath.
Yeah.
And then there was, Margaret Atwood, I remember reading.
Canadian.
That's us.
And Marge Piercy was this poet that I really liked in
this is great.
The 80s, too.
Did you read Mary Oliver at all?
Yes. I think I have one of her books. I never got fully all the way in, but I have one of her books of poetry.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm into her at the moment.
Yeah. I really like this poet, Sharon Olds. But she came to me maybe when I was more in college, and she's an incredible poet that she writes a lot of point of view persona poems. So a lot of it's playing with truth and, you know, you think you read a poem that's written by a woman and you're like, oh, she's venting her true life story, as opposed to, no, she's actually creating a character. And She does that really well.
Sure.
Where you're kind of like, is that true? And she's like, I'll never tell.
Yeah. I like that.
No, I do too. I like when you're kind of unsure about fantasy versus reality. Yeah. It's kind of a mixture. So in terms of college.
Yes.
You start. When did you finally think about screenwriting as like, maybe this is a job that I could pursue?
Let's see. Well, one of the things as I was coming out of high school was I applied to many colleges. I had this dream of going to like Northwestern or Berkeley or somewhere, and I didn't get into those places. But I remember that I accepted to three different schools. They were really, one was Occidental, one college in LA, one was UC San Diego. I was like, maybe I'll be a marine biologist.
All right.
Because I grew, I spent a lot of time on a sailboat when I was very young. I lived on a sailboat before we moved to Washington.
You have a great life.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Let's keep it going. Let's keep it coming. Thank you. Yeah. My parents gave me a great life. I love them for it. So, and then there was another college, Bates in Maine. Okay. I was going to go to college in Maine. Okay. So I fully accepted to three colleges. I had roommates at three different colleges. I was just kind of cooking through the summer, like, I'm going to put off that decision.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then finally, like August, I think my dad, I called, I was getting gas, filling up my tank with gas. And I remember calling him like, do you need anything from the store? And he's like, you can't come home until you decided where you're going to college. You can't keep this charade going on where you go to three different colleges at the same time. Right. You need to choose. So I chose Occidental College, and it brought me to Los Angeles, which brought me home to the place where I'd spent the first 6 years of my life living on the boat. And I'd always idealize, you know, had this idyllic version of LA in my mind, and returning to be a California girl. So it was a great fit for me, that school, because it was a very small college. It's only 1,600 students. Yeah, wow. And I got to go to a big city, but also be in a small spot.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I then, I believe like sophomore year, started doing an internship program at this company, Cinetel Films, where I was reading screenplays and doing coverage, which is like, you know, you do a, you read the script, you do a book report on it.
That's where I started as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Where was that?
It was a company in Toronto called Chesler Perlmutter.
Huh.
Yeah, and also I did it during college at a place called the Characters Agency.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. It's a great training for screenwriting, I think. And I think that's where I got the idea that I could be, and my plan was, because I'd really been writing poetry a lot, and I had started publishing in literary journals and was doing a lot of readings on campus and had met these cool older girls who were like, brought me to Throwing Muses concerts and Pixies concerts, and they were like, you're really drawn to my writing and empowered me greatly, and I was kind of becoming like the campus poet or one of them, you know.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
And working with people in literary journals, and so I had this idea I could be a screenwriter by day and then a poet by night, you know. So that was kind of, I could make a living at this screenwriting thing, and that could be my day job, and then I can keep at it. But yeah, so I had a wonderful mentor at Cinetel Films, Catalin Nell, who, it turns out, had given Quentin Tarantino his first screenwriting job and Roger Avery his first screenwriting job on these little tiny, tiny rewrites. Wow. And she, when I graduated from college, she invited me back to do coverage for payment, and then she hired me to work as a development executive.
Cool.
But in the middle of that, I also went to NYU for a semester to study screenwriting.
This sounds like you guys might have a very similar
life. Do we have the same? Are we the same person?
You might be. It's just slightly off. Like, you're so close. Just
how so? Wait, did you go to NYU as well?
I
but went you went to study screenwriting.
Yeah, so I got my start doing coverage, then became a director of development at this company. And then I went to New York to New York Film Academy.
Oh, wow.
Mainly because I wanted an excuse to live in New York.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel like it was super necessary to go to school because I've like read every screenwriting book ever, but like, because and it was like a beginner's course, you know.
Yeah.
But I was like, whatever, this is gonna, I'll meet people, I'll meet teachers, and I'm living in New York, so I don't care.
And did you find that you liked it?
I loved it. I think it's probably like I could cry thinking about it. Like, I just loved it so much.
Wow. I felt really mixed on my experience there.
In New York?
I only stayed there for 4 months.
Okay.
Same. Really? Yeah. You had the time of your life. I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just didn't know if I could live there forever.
No, I never felt like I could live there forever. But I met a boy, and I was writing at a different public library every day. And
oh, cool.
Cafe, and we were going to concerts and movies and eating good food. Great. And I was dog sitting, so I didn't have to pay rent. So I lived in 23 different apartments.
Holy shit!
And I just, like, I was just, like, basking in, like, my own fantasy of what a rom-com could be like in real life.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, my God.
It was a good time.
You really did it right.
Yeah.
But you didn't particularly.
Well, I mean, I was going to school there.
Yeah.
I wasn't living in 23 apartments.
No one is.
I mean, it was a pretty great apartment. I remember arriving to NYU and getting this apartment, and then going to the campus, and then them saying, "We have no record of your existence." And I was like, I have moved to New York. Yeah. What is, I am alone. I am 20 years old, yeah. You know? And then they said, like, you need to go to find the paperwork somewhere if you claim that you really are a person that has been accepted for this visiting semester program. No. So I went to, like, the School of Cinema Studies where I had kind of entered in sideways, right? Yeah. So I come in through like a film history angle so then I can get to my screenwriting, get into that portion. And I remember going to the guy's office and there just being piles and piles of paper everywhere with like so much debris. And I was like, no, I'm a person. Like, I am a student. I am matriculating here. I've moved here. And then I found on his desk my application, which had like a check mark on it. And I was like, I was like, yeah, no, this is me. This is it. I'm here. So they let me in.
They just let you in.
Yeah.
That's funny.
A lot of hard copies of things were involved in my history.
Oh man.
So you write a lot with Karen McCullough.
Yes.
Did you, I might be going ahead of myself here, but when did you meet her in this scenario?
Okay. So no, it's tracking perfectly.
Oh, good.
Because
excellent.
I met her when I got that development job at Cinetel.
Awesome.
She sent in, you know, it was pre-internet, so I'm receiving mailed in query letters from people. Yeah. And then I would like get a query letter with a synopsis, and then I would respond and say, mail me your script. And then they would mail me a screenplay. And she mailed me her screenplay that she mailed me a query letter and had like four ideas, and I was like, I like to read. I mail her back a letter. I like to read that one.
Oh,
she mails me a screenplay. Then I mail her a response. That was really good. May I please read this one? She mails it back to me. Then I think by like time number three of that, I call her on the phone and I'm like, hello, it's Kirsten Smith from Cinetel Films. And she's like, wow, this is exciting.
Yeah.
Like, I've hit the big time. I'm in a cubicle, you know, I'm just sitting in some tiny cramped area. And, I just say, like, when you're ever in L.A., she was living in Denver, Colorado at the time. And I said, when you're ever in L.A., let's meet for a drink. And then I'm trucking along at that job. I realize I need to write full time. I quit the job. I'm still doing freelance PR with them. And then she comes to L.A. and we meet for drinks. And I'm like, great. Well, what are you working on? I'm like writing full time, and she tells me about an idea that she has, and it's like a female action ensemble. And we've just, Long Kiss Goodnight has just about to come out, I think, or the Gina Davis, Samuel L. Jackson, underrated badass movie. Yeah. So we're like, that movie's going to be huge. And then she tells me her idea, and it's like women who meet in a rape crisis like they've all like been assaulted, and they meet in this like self-defense class, and then they like get recruited by this agent to like go kill these bad guys, and they team up. And
that's a cool idea.
Her pitch was probably better than what that was, but I was very I was like, oh yeah, and maybe Tracy Lords is a star, and Taya Leone and Lily Taylor, all these yeah. 90s yeah. like deep cut. And she's like, yeah. And then so we start taking notes on cocktail napkins, like, we'll have more margaritas, please. That sounds really good. And then I think we went to like another bar. Then we're basically like just brainstorming the night away. I tried to steal an ottoman later in the evening from a place.
And get arrested then, again.
And then so we start. She goes back to Denver, and then we start writing this script long distance. We outlined it and wrote it. I think I would go to Denver one time. We rewrite the script, and yeah, we wrote it all long distance, and no one was excited about it as we were. But then we were like, we have to write a teen movie.
Yes.
That's our plan. So then we set about trying to find this perfect like fable to adapt, or myth, or fairy tale. Yeah. Because Clueless has come out. And that obviously was a brilliant adaptation of Emma. And so Romeo and Juliet, I think, was on the horizon. So we were sort of like, these teen adaptations of classics could be the next big thing. And so we set about trying to find the perfect one. And it took us quite a minute of real diligent Cliff's Notes research and like library research and asking everyone we knew. And finally, one night, a friend of mine that I went to college with, a fellow English major, we're in a bar and like we're jamming to like some band. And he's like, yo, what about Taming of the Shrew? Like, that could be a really good one for your update. And like, you could make the shrew like a girl. And then we're like, you could reverse the genders. And I ran back and told Karen, and she's like, yes. And then we realized, no, we don't need to reverse the genders because, you know, shrews and we can make the shrew a guy, was what he was saying. Like, make the shrew a dude. And we're like, all shrews are dudes.
Right.
So all dudes are shrews. Yeah, yeah. So, it's perfect the way it is. So then we like went to a timeshare in Mexico to outline the movie, which was really fun.
This is so great.
And I can, yeah, honestly, this is amazing.
So
I'm so obsessed with this.
I mean, we need to reveal. Obviously, we know what movie you're talking about.
Oh, did I not say what
I
it
don't
is?
Think
so.
No.
Oh, shit. Sorry. So that became 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
Which was our first episode on this. Because when Carly and I started this, Carly was like, we have to go with, I mean, that's one of your favorite movies.
Oh, 100%. Specifically. It's probably top.
But we were also like, if we want to do this podcast about teenage movies, that's the movie as far as we're concerned.
Oh, wow.
So we literally were like number one, although you were a little nervous of starting so high.
I actually didn't want to start with 10 Things because I was like, it's gonna be hard for me to be myself for our first episode, so I want to do it like episode 50 when I can really like dive in,
right?
So I'm kind of mad about it, but anyways,
it's fine. It's a good episode.
So okay, so you and Karen write 10 Things, you sell it. Did that take time? Or
yes, it took quite a bit of time.
Okay.
It took a lot. Let's see. I feel like we finished it in January of 1997. And then we were still, I was working at a job for a literary manager. Karen was still living in Denver. And we were like sending it to all these people we knew and kind of going back and forth. It took us 6 months to really find the right person. At one point we had attached a director called Alan Moyle, who's Canadian, and he did Pump Up the Volume.
Cool.
And the script went out with him attached, but it didn't sell. And then Karen found a manager who then ended up taking it out and selling it. So it kind of was it had a few life cycles, which is sort of weird because you think, you take it out once, and if it doesn't sell, it's over.
Yeah.
But in this case, it had another full life, which was pretty cool.
That's so cool.
And then it went around to a lot of people, and there was no bidding war. We had a lot of fans of the writing, but we only had one interested party, which was Disney. Touchstone Pictures.
Not bad.
And so we made a deal, like an option, very low option agreement for a year for not a lot of money, but it was a start. And then that got us an agent, and then that got us a TV deal, and then that got Karen to move out to LA.
Yeah.
We were writing on a TV show, which was a very low-rated show called Getting Personal, starring John Cryer and Vivica A. Fox and Elliot Gould. What is this cast?
Yeah, very that's what I was going to say.
Very eclectic, but also big names.
Yeah.
You're saying it's a small little thing, but there's big
Oh,
big
it was
people.
A big show. It just was a low-rated
show. I see what you're saying.
It was
right.
kind of back in the day where they would make 28 episodes of television before they would cancel it. Because there was just not a lot of things going on. But then Karen and I were also, as we were writing on that show, which was the end of 97, like things, once we sort of optioned the script, things fell into place. We pitched a girl surfing movie. We sold that. And then we were rewriting 10 Things with the studio's notes. And then we found out that they really wanted to make a teen movie. It wasn't just an option. They were going to make one. And there was two that they had optioned, ours and a movie called School Slut.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. Disney. Who knew?
Cool.
Yeah. So we were kind of in this like rewrite contest to see which rewrite would turn out better. So we were just pulling all-nighters working on the show and going back to Karen's place and rewriting. And then they liked our draft of the script. And so they then greenlit the movie off of just the script, which was kind of it's a unique thing now to usually to get a movie made. You have to have like the movie star and the director and all those things.
And everyone in 10 Things was sort of up and coming for the most part. Even Allison Janney was in it. Like that's pretty
cool. Oh my God.
Did you love her then?
I loved her. Yeah. I mean, that was my introduction to her work. I think I'd seen her in Big Night, which was a Stanley Tucci movie. She came from New York Theater, I think. But I mean, she was so amazing as Miss Perky.
Oh my gosh, the best.
So
it's
great.
Really great watching the movie now, like revisiting it, and you're like, oh my God, these are every person that comes up. You're like, oh, like every single person now, I mean, then too, but now specifically are like huge people. And you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, every single person. You're like, holy crap, it's a great beginning for a lot of them or early beginnings, I guess, for some of them. And it's really cool. It's such a good, like,
And you're talking about how when you're growing up, your idols were like Madonna. And for me, it was Kat Stafford.
Really?
She's so cool. She stands up for herself, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't know if I'd seen a character like that before.
Wow.
And so I was just, I just loved her. I actually got like camo shirt like her.
Oh my God.
I was like, I was 9 when the movie came out, and I was like, I'm going to read Feminine Mystique.
Yes. Our work here is done.
Yeah, no, like I really do mean that. And
thank you.
It's such an important movie to me. And of course, Keith is amazing. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt. We are like a bit running out of time, so I want to jump ahead a bit. Okay, so 10 Things.
Yes.
Does your life kind of change after that? Because it's a complete hit without having like huge stars in it. So was it kind of a shock?
I don't know if it was a complete hit, you guys, because it was released on the same weekend that The Matrix was released.
We
were kind of decimated at the box office. But what it did do was it did change our lives in that it was our first script that we'd optioned, and it happened to also get made, which is really weird.
Amazing.
And then it put us right into a really nice position where there were lots of movies about young women and female comedies being developed in this time period, which is like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
And so we got us a producer, two producers sent us the manuscript for Legally Blonde after 10 Things kind of put us on the radar. Yeah. It hadn't come out yet, the movie 10 Things, but we got that manuscript and we got that job writing Legally Blonde. And so then that kind of pushed us into another thing where, as you can tell from our resume, it was like there was so much excitement from in Hollywood making stories about young women around this time, adaptations and strong teen characters and like strong female characters in their early 20s and mid 20s. And it was an active time, and we just kept like rolling from one into the next.
And with Legally Blonde, so it was made for, I think I read anyways, it was made for like $18 million, and then it made like 105. Like, does your life just kind of change after that? Because you must, yeah, you must still get residuals from Legally Blonde.
Oh, yes. We do, which is lovely.
That's amazing. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
And it's related. Like, we were talking about it this morning, or this, whatever it was, the afternoon. We went to Hamburger Mary's in L.A. last night. And yes, it was Work Mary show. And there's all these different people doing their, you know, their lip syncing, all these different queens doing their lip syncing. And one came out and she was the Broadway queen and she did Legally Blonde.
Oh, no way.
And I was, they all have great like video of me just because I study theater. So I'm like dancing and singing in the back with this queen, like just loving it so much. And then we were meeting with you the next day and we're like, this is so cool. Yeah. That's
a kismet.
It was great. Yeah. It was really cool.
I love that.
I'm sorry. I feel like I kind of have to rush a bit, but I could talk to you for 45 hours. so then we're actually going to, when this movie comes out, when this episode comes out, it's going to come out on a Tuesday.
Okay.
And then on the Thursday, we're going to review She's the Man.
Because I love that.
Love She's the Man.
And we haven't done it yet. And we're
it's going to be really good.
Because there's all of the movies, you know, you can find a line or two. But that movie is, like, that's quotable movie.
I like when Amanda Bynes says, I got a lifetime of knowledge.
God.
She gives such a great performance.
She's amazing.
She is. And you know, she really was channeling the director of the movie, Andy Fickman, who's from Texas. Because you know she has like a little bit of a twang going on.
A little bit.
She has. And she, I think, just based her characterization on looking at him and his kind of Texas swagger, like, kind of vibe, like, you know, because she does a little bit of talk like that. And, you know, it's such a curious and exceptionally odd and special and incredible performance.
And that's another movie that's based off of a Shakespeare story.
Yes. And that was sent to us as a project to rewrite, and Amanda was attached to to it. And so we were brought in, I think, but maybe by her or by with the producers. And we got to kind of work on the project with her. We did another rewrite for her on a movie called What a Girl Wants.
We love that movie. I have it on DVD.
You did a rewrite of that. Of course you did.
We did. We're uncredited rewrite, but we got to go to London and like go to the table read and meet Colin
Obviously
Firth
they had something to do with it.
Of course, because if you listen to that episode, amazing. Which it's okay if you never do, but about how much I love the writing, and I'm like, even though this is a teen cheesy movie, I'm like, the writing holds up. Like, this is legit.
We are obsessed.
I really do say that. So.
What a Girl Wants. What a Girl Wants truly, truly, and this is so stupid, but what I don't care, is a movie. I ended up moving to England for 2 years, and it's genuinely, I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go, not even anything like, I'm not going to have a father who's becoming the prime minister or anything, but it was more of when she was in the markets in Camden Market. I was like, oh my God. And every time to this day, if I go to London and go into one of the markets, I'm like, what a girl want? Like immediately, it's such a good movie. Okay. Yeah.
I do remember getting like a tiny a bit of wisdom from Amanda Bynes where she, when we got the screenplay for She's the Man, it was called Dude Looks Like a Lady. And Amanda was really not into that title. Yeah. And she said the title has to be something that you can picture people going up to the ticket counter and saying, I'll take two for insert title here. And she really got me in that headspace of like, okay, let's visualize going up. And she's like, because you can't be embarrassed saying, I'll take two for Dude Looks Like a Lady. She's like, that would be embarrassing to say. Yeah. So the title has to be something you're really proud of saying as a paying customer.
That's a good...
I thought it was wise.
That's a really good way to think of it.
We're such big fans of Amanda Bynes, too.
Like, yes. We love her.
Yeah, she was kind of a comedic genius
in
her day.
Yeah. I wanted to be her so badly. Yeah. What a Girl Wants era, especially. Do you want to talk about Trinkets really quick?
Yes. So,
I got to talk about it. We have to.
That should be the next one. Yes. Yes. So we both watched it on Netflix.
You did?
We both
did.
Loved it?
Okay,
yes.
Good.
I went into it. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I went into it. Carly was like, you got to watch it. And I'm like, okay, sure, I will. And I don't find myself connecting now with current movies about or TV shows about teens. And so I was like, okay, I'll watch it. I texted Carly throughout it, and I was like, I'm obsessed.
Oh, wow.
The, everything about it, I genuinely was like kind of confused about how I was connecting so strongly with it. And we both loved it. Like,
thank you.
Really. Yeah, yeah. And we can, it's announced that there's a second one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is another one coming out.
There is.
A second season, I should say. I'm saying it like it's a movie. Second season.
Yes. Second season. And, you know, it started as a result of a child, sort of like my childhood before I lived in Washington State. I lived in Oregon, Lake Oswego, Oregon, where the show is set. And, it's the show's based on a novel that I wrote, a YA novel.
And when did you write that novel?
I wrote that novel in, oh my God, like 2006. I don't know.
I think it said 2006.
I wrote that, 2006. Yeah. 2006.
Sure, 100%.
Yes, 2006. And so, I mean, I was a little bit of a shoplifter with my friends. And so there was not a place to go where we could really like process our addiction and go into a recovery mode.
Right.
So I dreamed of a Shoplifters Anonymous support group, and I dreamed of a la the Breakfast Club, kind of meeting like your chosen tribe. And so, it's a personal story. It's based on a place where I used to live. And
the novel's the same name.
Trinkets.
So it's also the same name. Okay.
And it just came out and re-released in paperback with all of the actors on the cover.
Oh.
And it's really exciting to get something, to kind of get the book a second life. And it was a lot of fun to update the book.
Mm-hmm.
How many times can you, you know, it's just a joy to have a source material that then you can go and be like, I think I can do better than that. Like, I'm going to improve this. I'm going to do a little thing here and there. And then I think it's also good because there's some story stuff in the book that we didn't quite get to that can tide people over in between season one and season two.
Sure.
Great.
So did you, really quickly, I know. I'm sorry, Carly. I'm sorry. I just have a really quick question. I was thinking about this the whole time. I was waiting for us to get to Trinkets because I wanted to ask this. You're not a teenager right now, and you currently
inside
you are. But so Trinkets came out this year, correct?
Yes.
2019.
Yes.
It did.
Did you find it difficult I know it was from a book from a while ago, 15 years ago, but did you find it difficult to help steer those teen characters? Like, because they're so relatable. Like, I don't know how you did it. I really don't. And I want to figure out how you did.
I know. I guess that just goes back to feeling like kind of stunted and
not
evolving properly. So I found it. I mean, obviously, I partner with a great writing team. And that was really good to be able to like check ourselves in terms of keeping things as current as we possibly could and pushing it into 2019, even from a book from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, I just felt like it was, I don't know. I'm in touch with my teen self,
okay.
but I always want to keep it as contemporary as possible. And as we wrote the show, it was really important to keep it fresh and, just having a lot of having a couple smart writers around to sort of like read it and say like, oh, not, that's not cool. And this kind of thing. But
have you had a lot of say in the casting?
Yes.
Because seem to have, between you and Karen, you seem to have impeccable taste. You've started so many careers.
Oh,
like
thanks.
Even Emma Stone in House Bunny, like no one knew who she was.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I could take credit for that, but that was Anna Faris's manager, Doug Wald, was also working with Emma. So she was coming off of Superbad and he suggested her for House Bunny. And I mean, she was so fantastic.
I'm obsessed.
What an honor to be part of her like early career.
Sure.
And she's always so cool when she sees Karen and I, like it's always a giant love fest of just like, yay.
Oh my God. That's so cool.
Cause that movie was really, House Bunny was very special for all of the young actresses because Anna was producing the movie based on this idea that she and Karen and I had come up with together.
Mm-hmm.
And they were super empowered by that because that was not a thing. They'd never really been on the set of a movie where like the lead actress is also a producer and also had a creator of the character.
Yeah.
And they were just like really alive with admiration for her.
A young woman.
And she was really like a mama bear to them and just loved them. And it was a great summer we had.
Awesome. Yeah. Anna seems like she's the best.
Yeah. She is the best.
We'll get her one day.
So to wrap this up, because I don't want to make you late for your meeting on Trinkets season 2. Can I say that?
Yes.
Yeah. We also have to compliment how much we love the soundtrack, which.
Oh, we're obsessed. Oh, my God. I literally was like, I texted Carly and I was like, I'm feeling very emotional by this soundtrack.
The music. Thank you for saying that, because the music is so important to me. And I mean, I'm really proud of the performances and the music, and I can't wait to have more incredible music in season 2. And there's a playlist on Spotify. And
good. When's it coming out? Do we have a concept of that?
We're gonna say like soon. No, we're gonna say probably next year.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I can ask you a question.
Okay. Great.
All right. What rom-com did Kirsten Dunst follow up Bring It On with? Teen rom-com.
Oh, teen rom-com.
I would say Drop Dead Gorgeous, perhaps, or...
Get Over It?
Yes, that's what I was thinking, Get Over It.
She's been in a lot of teen movies. I don't know what order they go in.
I was thinking of Get Over It Taste, which is...
Get
Over It Taste. Oh, my God. Get Over It has like a Shakespeare. I think that's got a Shakespearean element, like a kind of a Midsummer Night's Dream thing.
That's a big thing, which I love.
With Ben Foster. Yes.
Yes.
Great. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Mila Kunis.
Right.
Oh my God, we got to do that one still.
Yeah, we still do.
Yes. And okay. Cisco.
Oh my God, I'm dead. Okay. Let's talk about what you're doing now. You're working on developing Trinkets 2.
Yes.
Where can we find you online on social media?
Oh yes, you can find me on the Twitter and the Instagrams.
What are your Instagrams and Twitters things?
Kiwi loves you.
On both?
All spelled out on both, yes.
And we'll tag you, obviously, when we post it and everything.
Great. Teach me the ways of the social medias.
Oh, we'll try. As we mentioned really quickly, this is Tuesday. We will be reviewing She's the Man this week. So if you have not seen it for whatever godforsaken reason, get watching it, and we will talk about it in a couple days.
And let me know if you have any questions about that are follow-up questions. You can patch me in.
Okay.
Oh, we will patch you in.
The Kiwi phone.
Yes.
Hello. What about that?
I love it. Any last words?
I just want to say thank you so much.
Oh. I was going to say thank you so much.
Oh, me. Thank you. Thank you.
You and Karen are two of my biggest inspirations. I've loved you since I was just a young gal.
Yay.
And honestly, today I was like, I had that same nervous energy of like a first date. I was like, I was so excited. I was like, what should I wear? And
you look great.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
So I really appreciate all your work and sort of like the female empowerment you put into all your work. And it's so funny and relatable. And I just hope you keep doing what you're doing. And it seems like things are going very well. So I'm excited for you.
Thank you for all of the support and love and inspiration from you too. Like, that really motors us to do what we want to do, and congratulations to you on everything that you're writing. I can't wait to come to your premieres.
Thank you for supporting us. Like, this is so, the fact that you came all the way, it's amazing. We're so happy.
I love you guys.
Thank you. We love you. You can find us on Twitter at Podcast Teenage, and you can find Kirsten at Kiwi Loves You, and Instagram Teenage Dirtbags Podcast. And also, Kirsten, Kiwi loves you.
Yay!
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye.